This is Road to Calvary with Pastor Dave Cook of Calvary Baptist Church. On today's edition.
This idea, if it's obeyed, eliminates this escalation, right? And it brings equity to the situation. It brings proper justice. The whole system of civil, penal, and international law that we have today, pretty much all over, is based on this idea of reparation and equity. This is pretty common. And that idea has its roots right here in this law of retaliation that we see in Leviticus and in Deuteronomy and Exodus. As it exists in the Bible, again, this was given to the judges in Israel as a basis for their sentencing.
All of society has derived most of its legal system from the law of Moses in one way or another. Especially in the Western world, the Judeo-Christian belief structure is deeply embedded in the justice system. Today, Pastor Dave will be explaining how even from the very beginning in the book of Leviticus and the book of Exodus, God instructed his people how to properly conduct themselves with laws and regulations. God has made it very clear that vengeance belongs to him and him alone. Now, here's Pastor Dave in the book of Matthew chapter 5 as he begins his message, As Good as Your Word.
Hollywood makes a tremendous amount of money making movies where there's a protagonist who goes through some kind of difficulty, someone wrongs them severely, and then they get their revenge. The rest of the movie, that happens in the first 10 minutes, and the rest of the movie is how this person's plotting and planning and working things out that those people are going to get. He's going to get his revenge on those people. They're going to get what is coming to them. Sometimes it's a teenager that's being bullied. You know, Karate Kid maybe, right? A teenager being bullied, or a man whose child was kidnapped, or maybe it's a policeman whose partner was killed. We've all, probably as I'm saying these things, probably at least a half dozen movies, if you've ever been a movie buff at all, probably at least a half dozen movies came to your mind immediately. There's a ton of movies with that kind of theme. We see injustice that gets dished out on someone undeserving, you know, someone who is just innocent. They have injustice dished out on them, and then we're just chomping at the bit to see the scales even. With a great soundtrack, too, you know, that builds up the tension. Now, justice is good, right? I think we'll agree, justice is a good thing. Justice, God is just, right? Justice is good. But this, I guess I should say, is this kind of revenge mentality? Is that the way we should be looking at things? And Jesus has a few things to say in our text this morning about how we should respond when we've been wronged, when people have wronged us. So if you would please turn with me once again to Matthew chapter 5, 38 through 42 together, verses 38 to 42. And as a reminder, we're going through what's known as the Sermon on the Mount. It's a sermon by Jesus where he's speaking to people up on a mountaintop or a hillside. And at this point in the sermon, Jesus is basically giving six different examples of how he termed the righteousness that surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, the righteousness that's required for entry into his kingdom. Today we come to the fifth of these six examples. So if you would, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. So once again, as we've seen in these other previous four examples that Jesus has given in this section of this sermon, Jesus begins by presenting the traditional Old Testament teaching, and then he follows it up with this radical fulfillment of ultimately where the Old Testament teaching was pointing to anyway. This is where the Old Testament was pointing to, but it's more fleshed out. It's more fulfilled in this new era of the Messiah, this new era of the Spirit. And so what we can see in this text as Jesus begins this section is that the law required equity. The law required equity. Jesus said in verse 38, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Fairness, justice. What you take, you have to give. What you inflict, you have to endure. Equity, direct equity. That's an exact quote an eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. Exact quote from three different Old Testament passages. It's from it's found in Exodus 21:24. It's found in Leviticus 24:30, which I just read a few moments ago. And it's found in Deuteronomy 19:21. And that's known, that idea, the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, that direct equity, is known as the lex talionis. That stands for, that means the law of retaliation. And that idea, that equity, that what you inflict, you endure, that what you take, you then have to give back, that idea is the foundation, or has been the foundation, of justice in multiple cultures all around the world in just about every era, not simply Israel. It's not limited to Old Testament Israel. The purpose of this law, the primary reason for this law, is to limit vengeance. It's to limit the response so that you don't go beyond what has been done, so that you don't go beyond justice. Because otherwise, if there's no standard there, then it can very rapidly fall into chaos. Someone trespasses, and you respond by giving them a severe beating. That beating is then repaid from the other side with murder. That murder is then given back to the other side in genocide. I mean, these things, it's like the nuclear proliferation. It just continues to escalate. And we certainly can see this in different world situations. If you ever saw the movie The Untouchables, you see a glimpse of this idea in Sean Connery's character as he's speaking to Elliot Ness, and he's talking to him about how he needed to beat Al Capone. He said, "You want to beat Capone?" is what he says. "You want to know how to get Capone? They pull a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way, and that's how you get Capone." That's the idea of just escalating. That's going beyond what is just, beyond eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, into I'm just going to keep on hitting as hard as I can so that you can't get up again and hit back, right? This is what happens when you don't have this law of lex talionis, this law of retaliation. This idea, if it's obeyed, eliminates this escalation, right? And it brings equity to the situation. It brings proper justice. The whole system of civil, penal, and international law that we have today, pretty much all over, is based on this idea of reparation and equity. This is pretty common. And that idea has its roots right here in this law of retaliation that we see in Leviticus and in Deuteronomy and Exodus. As it exists in the Bible, again, this was given to the judges in Israel as a basis for their sentencing. It wasn't given to individuals on this is how you settle your issues with others, right? It wasn't like if someone punches me and knocks out my tooth, I can turn around and punch him back. That wasn't the point. The point was that the courts now can make a just declaration of what needs to be done. Of course, the issue, of course, isn't limited to eyes and teeth, right? But it's to come up with an equivalent penalty for whatever offense was committed. We want to, again, preserve equity. In the Mishnah, which is a collection of early rabbinical interpretations of Scripture, there's an entire section that covers how they were to assess proper damages, what guidelines to follow that expounded upon this idea of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. In the case of our legal system today, we see it all the time. You know, whatever the crime is, if we're watching either a legal drama or an actual court case, you know that they will say, well, manslaughter. And the maximum penalty it carries is 20 years or whatever. There's a maximum that the judge can't go beyond. They have some freedom within those standards, but they can't go beyond what the maximum penalty has been set for that charge. So a judge can't sentence someone to death for a parking ticket, at least not yet, not today. The punishment, the idea, the meaning, the desire is that the punishment fits the crime. And we all inherently know that, right? When we hear of things and, you know, someone made a smart comment, they kind of made a biting comment to someone, and that person turns around and punches them and beats them mercilessly, we say, whoa, all he did was make this little comment. And it, you know, because we understand the idea of justice and that goes way beyond, right? We understand that kind of inherently. So we have this traditional Old Testament teaching that the response to being wronged is exact retribution, no more, no less. Equity. It limits evil, right? It brings stability and order to society and human relationships. This is a good thing. But Jesus, in his teaching here, goes beyond this and brought what must have seemed at the time, because it still does today, let's face it, wildly radical teaching. Wildly radical teaching. Because the law required equity, but Jesus requires charity. Jesus requires charity. Now, in our culture, we have that word charity has kind of been narrowed to mean simply giving to the needy. You know, if I give some money to the Red Cross, if I put some money in the collection plate, that's charity. You know, for the fellowship fund that goes to others, that's charity. We donate to a needy cause. But biblically, it really has a much broader meaning. Charity means much more than just giving some money to the needy. I like how the 1828 Webster's Dictionary defines it. I'll tell you, if you ever, you can get a digital copy for free, but if you ever get a chance to read through the Webster's Dictionary in 1828, I believe that's the first edition of the Webster's Dictionary, it is wonderful because the examples that are given to what the definitions mean are mostly scripture. It's quite interesting. You don't see that today in today's Webster's, do you? But the 1828 Webster's Dictionary defines charity this way. It says, in a general sense, love, benevolence, goodwill, that disposition of heart which inclines men to think favorably of their fellow men and to do them good. In a theological sense, it includes supreme love to God and universal goodwill to men. That's a pretty good definition, I thought. And so this is what Jesus demands of us. And I think that idea is definitely seen in these instructions that Jesus gives in these verses. Look at verse 39. He says, but I say to you, right? You've heard it said, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who's evil. Now, that's a pretty heavy statement at that moment, right? Because you got to think about that. What does he mean by that? What does he mean, don't resist the one that's evil? Some people believe he's teaching absolute non-resistance, that no matter what's happening, doesn't matter if someone is trying to attack your child, doesn't matter if what's happening, that we are not to resist. They also, many people, other people obviously have different views along this line, but some people would say it's wrong for a Christian, for example, to be involved in the army or to be involved in the police force, or for a Christian to be involved even in the court system, because all of those things, a function of all of those things is to resist evil. And so people will look at this verse and say, well, Jesus says we're not to do that, so I can't serve in any of those capacities. What Jesus says here, though, with all respect to people who see things that way, what Jesus says here cannot be an absolute prohibition against the use of all force, including that of the police and the courts, because then the Bible would contradict itself. In Romans 13, 1 through 7, we see teaching that the state is an institution that's been set up by God, and it has the power given by God to earthly governments. They have the power to punish wrongdoers. That is a responsibility of this government given by God. And that would be impossible without the use of some degree of resistance or force. As always in Scripture, we can't look at one sentence, we can't look at one verse and pull it out of context of everything that's around it. We have to look at it within the context. Also look at what was going on in the time of what, as Jesus is speaking. But Jesus clarifies his own statement in what follows. He gives four different one-sentence illustrations of what it means to not resist the one who is evil. Each of these illustrations is kind of culturally specific. It kind of focuses on things that would have been going on at the time, but the principles absolutely, certainly, are actually quite easily, I think, pushed forward and very applicable to our lives here today. And these principles are intended for everyone who is a follower of Christ. So the second half of verse 39, Jesus gives this instruction. He says, if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also, right? We've all heard that phrase, just turn the other cheek, right? We've heard that a million times, turn the other cheek. And this is where that phrase comes from. Now, Jesus isn't describing, when he's talking about someone slapping you on the right cheek, he's not describing a violent assault, although it is technically an assault. But really what he's talking about is a very calculated insult. Because speaking, the way things functioned at the time, is that a if you were to, well, let me just put it this way. Back myself up a little bit. It specifies slapping on the right cheek, okay? So although I happen to be one of the few in the proud left-handed people, the majority of the world are right-handed. So if a right-handed person was going to slap someone on the right cheek, generally, without contorting themselves in some bizarre manner, they would have to do it backhanded. So the idea here is this is a backhanded slap that is a tremendously insulting thing to do. In that culture, slapping someone at all was an insult. But to slap someone backhanded was like a double insult. That was basically saying, you are worth nothing. It's very it's very much an act of disdain for the other person. It's an act of contempt that you consider them just lower than the animals. You know, you're basically saying they're nothing. They're worth nothing. So imagine, all right, if that's what that means. I mean, obviously, if anyone comes up to you and gives you a backhanded slap, you're not going to be too pleased about it. But in that culture where you know that is like the worst of insults, it's like spitting on someone, right? If that's the what you're steeped in and someone does that to you, how's your reaction going to be, right? I mean, are you going to be like, hey, that's awesome, let's go have a cup of coffee, right? Your blood may start to boil. You may start to, I can't believe, how could you do that? How could you treat me that way? I don't deserve that. Would you be ready to run over their motorcycle? I think that may be the natural reaction that comes. And take this a little farther. When Jesus is speaking of being slapped on the right cheek here, he's likely describing, certainly in many cases in his day, people who were being insulted because of their faith. Now, this kind of insult, a backhanded slap, would have been an insult that a Jew at the time could have gone to the courts. They could have gone and sought legal satisfaction. They could seek damages for doing that. But Jesus is saying here, don't do that. If you're dishonored, Jesus says, as one commentator put it, this is kind of their paraphrase, you should not go to the law about it. Rather, you should show yourselves to truly be my disciples by the way in which you bear the hatred and the insult, overcome the evil, and forgive the injustice. Even though you could seek to receive justice, don't do it. Lovingly take the insult. And if that's the way we respond, if that's the way we act in the face of just a tremendous insult, we're imitating Christ. Because it's said of Christ, when he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten. But what? He continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. See, Jesus knew who the ultimate judge was. And we should as well. So for us, if we're insulted or abused, we shouldn't respond by seeking to get even. I'm going to show them a thing or two. And even more so if the insult is because of Christ. We aren't to focus on seeking legal satisfaction, but as Jesus says, we're to turn the other cheek. In our country, we make a big deal about our rights. But what Jesus is telling us here is to swallow our pride and to give up our right to fairness and restitution. Now, that's the simple and clear meaning of what Jesus said, but that principle can be pressed a little further, because even though it happens, certainly we have altercations with people. It does happen in the world. People do insult one another, certainly even with a slap, even with physical, some type of physical assault. These things happen. But let's kind of bring it down and take this principle and press it a little bit and kind of bring it into a level of where we sometimes are every single day. Think of it this way. As followers of Christ, this is the principle of what Jesus is talking about here. As followers of Christ, we're called to set aside our petty ways of getting even by punishing other people and returning their own sins back to them. What do I mean by that? Well, what I mean is, let's say your spouse leaves something a mess, and then you mess something else up to get them back, to go, I'll show them, leave their stuff a mess. And then when they say, what happened here? Oh, I don't know. What happened? If a friend is late for a get-together, you have a planned get-together, and they keep you waiting, then the next time you have a get-together, you go, I'm going to show them. I'm going to go do something else first. I'll show up 20 minutes late. It's that kind of passive-aggressive And I'm going to just stick it to them a little bit. Just because they stuck me, I'm going to stick them back. That's the idea. It's that tit for tat. You do this to me, and I'll do something just as annoying back to you. We see that with kids all the time, right? Stop touching me, stop touching me, stop touching me. And that's simply not the way Christians are supposed to act. That's just not the way we are supposed to act. We're to be charitable toward one another, full of grace, not passive aggressive and petty. By turning the other cheek, we're making the other person and their well-being the center of our focus, right? How different is that from the way we normally react? Because our normal reaction is, this person did that to me, right? They insulted me. How dare they insult me? How dare they show up late for my meeting? How dare they do? And we get we take that personal offense and we put ourselves ultimately on the throne because we're the one that needs to be treated right. Instead of saying, no, well, okay, yes, they did wrong. And maybe there's a time, certainly we see in Matthew 18 and other things, there's a time for lovingly confronting people. But instead of focusing on what they did to me, how about turning it around and saying, what can I do for them? How can I help them to grow? How can I show a blessing to them that may point them back to Christ, who's the one I represent, who's the one I want to honor, who's the one I'm supposed to be living for? But we so easily can take our focus off of living for Christ and turn it back on to living for ourselves and our own reputations and our own desires. But what does Jesus say, right? Consider others more important than yourself. That's what Paul said, but obviously ultimately it's from Christ. Consider others more important than yourself. So what we do is we consider them, we consider the other person, we consider what is best for them, and then we adjust our actions according to what may point them to Christ. And when we live that way, it can have a tremendous effect on other people. God can use this kind of love to bring people to a spiritual awareness. There's an evangelist named Tom Skinner who had been a member of a street gang prior to his coming to Christ. And following his salvation, he would go back into the old neighborhoods where his gang had met. He actually, I think, was leading the gang at one point. But he would go back in there and he would play football with some of the old gang members with the purpose of sharing Christ with them. And during one football game that they were playing, one of the gang members really took advantage of his kindness and his Christianity and kind of hit him a little harder, kicked him in the middle of the game, insulted him, really gave him a hard time. Perhaps really pressing him to see how he was going to respond, but really abused him in the game. Afterward, Tom Skinner went to the person who was doing this and he said, you know, because of Jesus, I love you anyway. That's what Jesus is talking about. That's what he's focusing on. That is the attitude that as his followers, we need to have. He gave an example here of how a person should respond when he's insulted and he's wronged, right? We turn the other cheek. But he didn't stop there. He went on in verse 40 to say, and if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. Now, you've probably heard the phrase, he would give you the shirt off his back, right? That's a phrase we use for people who are just really generous, really kind. They would give you the shirt off their back. Well, back in Jesus' day, it was possible to sue someone for exactly that. You'd say, you know what? He doesn't have anything else. I'm taking his shirt. I want everything he's got. And they could do it and they could win it. But no one could take your outer cloak. They couldn't take that because that was considered essential for life. The outer cloak was something that was slept in at night to keep you warm, and certainly as you walked around during the day, it was what kept you warm as well. It was like a combination of a coat and a sleeping bag, both wrapped up into one.
If you missed any part of Pastor Dave Cook's teaching today on Road to Calvary, or if you'd like to listen to others like it, we encourage you to visit cbcriverhead.org. Once you're there, just click on the Sermons tab. If there's anything from today's teaching that you have a question on, or if you have any prayer requests you'd like us to pray for, please don't hesitate to get in touch with us. Call us at 631-727-4112. That number again is 631-727-4112. While we're honored to spend time with you through the airwaves on Road to Calvary, We're aware that having a church community is vital to your growth as a believer. If you're not involved in a local church yet, we encourage you to find one. In fact, if you're in or near the Riverhead area, we'd love to have you join us here at Calvary Baptist Church of Riverhead, New York. We gather each Sunday at 10:50 a.m. for a time of worship and Bible study. You can find all the information you need at cbcriverhead.org. To stay in touch with us throughout the week, find us on Facebook and YouTube. Links to both of those media sites are available on our website. Again, that was cbcriverhead.org. Before you go, we'd ask that you prayerfully consider donating to this ministry. We couldn't do it without listeners like you, and we greatly appreciate any and all amounts. Just click on the Giving tab on our website. Thanks for giving, and thanks for tuning in to today's edition of Road to Calvary.